Aimley began to swim towards Birmingham.
"That was wonderful," said Newt.
"Good," said Anathema. "The earth moved for everybody." She got up off the floor, leaving her clothes scattered across the carpet, and went into the bathroom. Newt raised his voice.
"I mean, it was really wonderful. Really, really wonderful. I always hoped it was going to be, and it was."
There was the sound of running water.
"What are you doing?" he asked.
"Taking a shower."
"Ah."
He wondered vaguely if everyone had to shower afterwards, or if it was just women, and he had a suspicion that B-days came into it somewhere.
"Tell you what," said Newt,
as Anathema came out of the bathroom swathed in a fluffy pink towel,
"we could do it again."
"Nope," she said, "not now." She finished drying herself and started picking up clothes from the floor, and, unself-consciously, pulling them on. Newt, a man who was prepared to wait half an hour for a free changing cubicle at swimming baths, rather than face the possibility of having to disrobe in front of another human being, found himself vaguely shocked and deeply thrilled. Bits of her kept appearing and disappearing, like a conjurer's hands. Newt kept trying to count her nipples and failing, although he didn't mind.
"Why not?" said Newt.
He was about to point out that it might not take long, but an inner voice counselled him against it. He was growing up quite quickly in a short time. Anathema shrugged. "Not an easy move when you're pulling on a sensible black skirt. She said we only did it this once." Newt opened his mouth two or three times, then said,
"She didn't. She bloody didn't. She couldn't predict that. I don't believe it."
Anathema, fully dressed, walked over to her card index, pulled one out and passed it to him. Newt read it and blushed and gave it back, tight-lipped. It wasn't simply the fact that Agnes had known and had expressed herself in the most transparent of codes. It was that, down the ages, various devices had scrawled encouraging little comments in the margin. She passed him the damp towel. "Here," she said, "hurry up. I've got to make the sandwiches, and we've got to get ready." He looked at the towel.
"What's this for?"
"Your shower." Ah, so it was something men and women both did. He was pleased he got that sorted out. "But you'll have to make it quick," she said.
"Why? Have we got to get out of here in the next 10 minutes before the building explodes?"
"Oh, no. We've got a couple of hours. It's just that I've used up most of the hot water. You've got a lot of plaster in your hair." The storm blew a dying gust around Jasmine Cottage, and holding the damp pink towel, no longer fluffy, in front of him strategically, Newt edged off to take a cold shower. In Shadwell's dream, he is floating high above a village green. In the centre of the green is a huge pile of kindling wood and dry branches. In the centre of the pile is a wooden stake. Men and women and children stand around on the grass, eyes bright, cheeks pink, expectant, excited. A sudden commotion. 10 men walk across the green, leading a handsome middle-aged woman. She must have been quite striking in her youth, and the word vivacious creeps into Shadwell's dreaming mind. In front of her walks Witchfinder Private Newton Pulsifer. No, it isn't Newt. The man is older and dressed in black leather. Shadwell recognises approvingly the ancient uniform of a Witchfinder Major. The woman climbs onto the pyre, thrusts her hands behind her, and is tied to the stake. The pyre is lit. She speaks to the crowd, says something, but Shadwell is too high to hear what it is. The crowd gathers around her. A witch, thinks Shadwell. They're burning a witch. It gives him a warm feeling. That was the right and proper way of things. That's how things were meant to be. Only, she looks directly up at him now and says, "That goes for you as well, you daft old fool." Only she was going to die. She was going to burn to death, and, Shadwell realised in his dream, it was a horrible way to die. The flames lick higher, and the woman looks up. She is staring straight at him, invisible though he is, and she is smiling. And then it all goes boom, a crash of thunder. That was thunder, thought Shadwell as he woke up, with the unshakable feeling that someone was still staring at him. He opened his eyes, and 13 glass eyes watched him from the various shelves of Madame Tracy's boudoir, staring out from a variety of fuzzy faces. He looked away and into the eyes of someone staring intently at him. It was him.
"Ugh," he thought in terror. "I'm having one of them out-of-your-body experiences. I can see my ain self. I'm a goner this time right enough."
He made frantic swimming motions in an effort to reach his own body, and then, as these things do, the perspectives clicked into place. Shadwell relaxed and wondered why anyone would want to put a mirror on their bedroom ceiling. He shook his head, baffled. He climbed out of the bed, pulled on his boots, and stood up warily. Something was missing. A cigarette. He thrust his hands deep into his pockets, pulled out a tin, and began to roll a cigarette. He'd been dreaming, he knew. Shadwell didn't remember the dream, but it made him feel uncomfortable, whatever it was. He lit the cigarette, and he saw his right hand, the ultimate weapon, the doomsday device. He pointed one finger at the one-eyed teddy bear.